Welcome to Home Story with Veronica. I'm Veronica Dickes, and today we're diving into the people, places, and decisions that make a house a home. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to Home Story, where we break down the real conversations homeowners, buyers, and investors need to hear. I'm your host, Veronica Dickes, and today we are diving into one of the most overlooked decisions in real estate, choosing the right property manager. Joining us is Michelle DiCarvalho, a powerhouse director of operations with deep leadership and operational expertise in the real estate industry. She's known for building strong teams, optimizing systems, and helping property owners protect their investments with smart strategic management. Michelle understands the difference between a property that thrives and a property that drains your money. And today, she'll walk us through what every landlord needs to know before signing on the dotted line. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Veronica.
Yes, it's so excited. Good to have you here. Now, let's begin by setting the foundation for today's first topic. How to choose a property manager wisely and avoid major regrets. So many homeowners and investors struggle because they don't know what to look for in a property manager. The wrong choice can lead to financial loss, to tenant issues, and legal trouble, and we don't want that. While the right one can grow your investment and eliminate stress. So, Michelle, what is the biggest mistake that you think owners make when choosing a property manager?
I think that you really have to find somebody that you vibe with, because if you're just going off of like a referral or somebody, you know, a name that you know in the industry, that doesn't mean that they're going to work for you. You're trusting them with your biggest investment, and you need to make sure that you feel comfortable letting them make decisions about your property so that, you know, you're both on the same page and can get along and have a great relationship.
I love that. And in your experience, how do you find out that you vibe with a client of yours? Do you meet? Do you have a conversation, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, a lot of my clients are not local. So for me, a lot of it is just having phone conversations with them.
Okay.
And they're not quick conversations. It's, you know, an hour or so on the phone, just trying to get to know their personality, their expectations, because there's different types of owners. There's owners that, you know, want to be hands-off, and then there's owners that want to be a little bit more hands-on. And you just need to find that balance.
That's true. Not every client is going to be the same. So you have to make sure that you find a property manager that's going to align with your needs.
Yes.
Because some property managers just want the hands-off and some of them want the hands-on. So
yes.
Really important to have that conversation.
Absolutely.
Okay? And speaking of the conversation, what are three questions that you recommend every landlord should ask before hiring a property manager?
I think it's important to know kind of the load that that property manager has already. So finding out how many properties that they manage currently in their portfolio.
Okay.
I also think it's important to know if that property manager has investment properties of their own.
True.
Because I really do think that that helps the property manager understand where an owner's coming from when you have to call them to tell them about maybe a big maintenance expense that's coming up. And I really think that those two questions are kind of like the most important ones.
Yeah, that's true. Because knowing that your property manager is an actual landlord as well really does make the world of a difference, because you're going through the same thing that they're going through.
Yes.
Yes, I love that.
It makes the conversations a little bit easier and more empathetic.
Absolutely.
Because you yourself have gone through that before, and you know probably the shockwave that they're going to feel when you tell them.
And if any of our viewers are just getting into investment and it's the first rental that they're going to do, what are some of the things that you recommend happen in the conversation that they have with the property manager that they're trying to hire? Like somebody who doesn't know, they've never been through it, they have no idea.
If it's a good property manager, they're going to walk them through step by step.
That is key right there.
So yeah. I don't really have questions that they should ask, like versus an experienced person. Like there's not a separate set of questions. I just really think that at the end of the conversation, as a new investor, if you still feel lost, maybe that's not the right fit for you, and you just keep interviewing.
Yes, that is very true. And what does a great property manager handle that most people don't even think about?
Okay, so this is a loaded question, because
yes,
the answer really is everything. And the reason that I say that is because a good property manager is going to handle the everyday nuances of your property and keep you out of the loop on those like little tiny things. Like that you hired the property manager, you're paying them for their services to handle your property. You don't need to know that the tenant called and is complaining about something. Like that's what the property manager handles.
Right.
But if there's a big item, that's when you bring the owner back in the loop. But for everyday stuff, we handle that, and we should not have to have those conversations with the owners about the everyday little things.
Yes. And listen, I will tell you this. We just acquired investment property, me and my husband, and oh my God, there's a lot of little things.
Yes.
And we're just getting it ready to send it over to Michelle so that she can handle it once we have everybody on check. But it is so true.
Yes.
I mean, you get calls for
everything.
I wish I could share it, but it's just ridiculous. And it would take me forever to tell you all the reasons. But that is very true. Just think about that. Think about all the time that it's going to take from you if you don't have a property manager. Yeah. All the stress of having to deal with every little thing. And if you don't reply right away.
Yes.
These people call you at 11, 12 at night. It's crazy. So when you have a property manager, I'm guessing there's an office number or something like that, that it's in an emergency line, or how does that part work?
Both. There is both, but they also, we have a management portal, that they can communicate with us through. And also, like, it's really easy for me to set expectations with your tenants because there's no emotional attachment to the property versus you trying to set those expectations when they know that you own the property and they're going to try to pull at your heartstrings to get whatever it is they're asking
I have learned my lesson. That is true. And having that portal, I think it does make a big difference.
It does.
Because it's not a text or a phone call. Correct. They can actually go online. Yes. And then you can manage it when you get the request.
Yes. And they can still text me from there. Yeah. And they do have my phone number. If it's a true emergency, they can obviously reach out to me. But for the most part, you know, things that come in overnight are handled the next day.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to hire her right now. And how do property managers actually protect a landlord from legal issues?
So I think the biggest way that we do that is going to be with the leases that we use. So, and I'm talking about me specifically in this instance, but we do use the North Carolina or the South Carolina attorney drafted leases.
Yeah.
And so if we get to the point where we have to represent you in court, the magistrates know those leases like the back of their hand. Mm-hmm. And so there's no surprises that are in there. It's very straight cut, you know, and straightforward. So I do think that that helps favor on the landlord side when we do that.
Absolutely. And I will say this, when I acquired my property, the previous owner who had done the leases, they used a 2-page lease.
Yeah.
And it is horrible. I mean, people, you have to spend time on the lease. That is about the most important thing that you do when you rent. Because if something happens later on, that's how you protect yourself. That's how you protect your property.
Yeah. And there are things like that you can add into the lease. Like a lot of people, if they have a fireplace, they want to make the note that they don't want the tenants to burn wood, you know, in the fireplace. Yeah. So like we can add little things like that. But the majority of like the lease is already written for us.
Yes. And that is going to make the world of a difference. Mm-hmm. I just had to go to court for an eviction. And oh my gosh, having that 2-page lease was not easy.
Yeah.
To be able to justify to the judge why this person needs to leave the property and how they violated the lease. Had I done it with the right lease or had the previous owner, because now I'm using the right lease from now on. But that is a great point. And Michelle, how do you know when it's time to fire your current manager and upgrade and use a better manager?
I think really it's like when you feel your expectations are not being met. So it goes back to the original about vibing with the person. Maybe situations change. Maybe your property manager has grown their portfolio and maybe you're not feeling that one-on-one service that you felt in the beginning, and you want that. Mm-hmm. So I just think it goes back to that original piece where when you're not vibing, when your expectations are not being met with your current person, that's when it's time just to have conversations with other property managers and see if maybe it is time.
Yeah. when you're not getting the service, mm-hmm. if your tenants are complaining, maybe if you hear something. Has that ever happened?
Yeah. Oh, so I would take that with a grain of salt too.
Okay.
Because
yes.
So like I said, for property managers, there's no emotional attachment to the property.
Yeah.
So we can be very black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And if the tenant is not getting what they want, of course they're going to complain.
Right.
But also we follow the law and we follow the owner's directive. So, you know.
They might just not be happy with the decision.
Yes.
Just because it's not what they wanted.
Exactly.
But not, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a good property manager right there.
Yes. And also, we don't share the owner's contact information.
Perfect.
So we really try to shield the owner from having to deal with that. But yeah. Of course, there's public records. So if they,
yes.
you know.
Especially nowadays,
yes,
you can find
there's,
everybody everywhere.
Yes, they can snoop and find it. But we don't give that information out to shield them from those things. Because
yes.
if you do that, you literally just cut off your property manager. And now they're just going to go straight to you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. And real quick before we go on our break, what's one thing that property managers do that when somebody hires you, they have no idea that you do?
Project management.
Project management.
So we do not do project management.
Yep.
If you have to do a major renovation on your house, you either need to pay us for a separate service or hire a general contractor to manage that process because property managers do not get paid unless we're collecting rent.
So, exactly. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So if the house is not being rented.
Yes. So that, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously, if it's minor things, that's completely different. But if you're doing a complete overhaul on your house, then that's something you should consider.
So if the house is not being rented, your manager is not making any money, and of course, they have to make money to be able to stay in business. That's when they can refer you to somebody
yes.
as well. Or you need to hire somebody on the outside. I love it. This has been awesome information. And we are going to be right back. And up next, we're going to tackle one of the most common questions in real estate. How much rent should you really be charging? I know this is a good subject for everybody. We'll be right back. Stories, strategies, and inspiration to help you write your next home chapter. This is Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Veronica Dinkins, and you're watching Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. Let's jump back into today's conversation. Welcome back to Home Story with Veronica. One more design and real estate tips. Stay connected to Home Story and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS for nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. If you prefer podcasts, you can listen right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From home tips to lifestyle and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. We are here with the beautiful Michelle DiCarvalho. And now we're going to dive into a question that every homeowner, landlord, and investor Googles at least once. What rent should I charge? The magic question. This segment addresses the confusion and fear behind pricing because charging too much or too little can really cost you thousands of dollars in the long run. Pricing rental rates correctly is one of the biggest factors in profitability. Many landlords guess, rely on outdated information, or trust online calculators that don't tell the whole story. So we are here with an expert that's going to guide us on that. Michelle, in your opinion, what is the smartest way to figure out the right rental price in today's market?
So really, you need to look at the active rentals.
When you say active, is rentals that are for rent available at this time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And you can look on, you can look in two places. I find that Zillow has a lot of rental listings. So you can look there to kind of just gauge what is out there in your community.
Okay.
And then as realtors, we can also go on and look in MLS to see what is pulling there as well. And really in this market, it is a little bit like right now, mm-hmm. it is a little bit of a slow market on the rentals. So really looking at the active rentals will help you gauge where you need to be priced because you don't want to, you know, you might have a number in your head and that maybe last year that number worked.
Right. But things change.
Things change. And we're finding out now, even, you know, people who rented last year and now the the lease is up and they're having to re-rent their property, they're actually getting lower rent right now than they did last year.
Right. Because market shifts.
Yes.
Stuff happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we've seen this nationwide. We are specifically in North Carolina and Charlotte, but I think nationwide we felt the market shift a little bit. So
yeah,
that definitely has an effect. And unemployment rates and all, you know, everything that's happening right now.
Yeah.
Definitely has an impact on that. So it doesn't mean that you're going backwards. It's just an adjustment while the market shifts. Is that your opinion as well?
Yeah. And I do think like right now, something else in the rental side is that there's a lot more inventory.
So more
specifically in rentals. Yes. So, you know, where a couple years ago you might have only had one or two rentals available in that community. Now you go online and you look and there's five, six, seven. And they're all just taking a little bit longer to lease.
Because people have options and they can compare. And so speaking of that, when you have a rental property and you have a lot of competition that is happening right around you, maybe in the same neighborhood, what are some of the upgrades that give the biggest rent increase for the least cost that can also help you rent the property faster?
So I don't really think that there's any one thing that you can do, but I do just think overall, in general, keeping your property updated, and maybe it's just doing little things every time, but if you just have a really hard time when you've had a tenant in there for an extended period of time, and obviously the rent may have appreciated, but your upgrades haven't done the same.
Yeah.
So then, you know, then it's hard to say, oh, well, we could get X amount of dollars, but really the condition of the unit would only be this. So especially when you've had a tenant in there for 2+ years, I would say you really should anticipate doing some sort of upgrade after they move out.
Things get worn out. So, okay, so I have a property. I've had a tenant living there 3 years. And I call you and I say, Michelle, the tenant's about to move out. What are some of the things that I need to be ready to do exactly? What are some of the recommendations of the updates that you would do?
Yeah, so I definitely would say, like, we would have to go in and do a full painting in the property. We'll look at the floors. It really depends on the floor coverings that you have in the house. If it's carpet, it just depends how long they've been in the unit. If they're a hard floor covering like the LVP or hardwoods, those have a little bit longer life. So probably just making sure that they still look really good.
Yeah.
And then you can start to kind of look at the bigger upgrades, which would be kind of countertops, bathrooms, kitchens, and cabinets. These days, really, we find that the cabinets are actually in really good condition.
Yeah.
Maybe we just need to change their appearance and do some painting with them.
The hardware or just making it a little fresh.
Yeah.
Because think about it. If you are looking to rent a place and you go see five different locations that are within the same neighborhood, even if one is smaller than the one that you have, if you walk in and everything looks nice and clean and freshly painted, you can smell that paint, which one you're going to pick? You're going to pick that one or you're going to pick one that has that, you know, moldy humidity smell because it hasn't been, and it has stains on the walls and marks from all of the furniture that they had.
Yeah.
Just think about that. Think like somebody who would rent that place.
Yeah.
It's.
Yeah. And it's hard when you have a tenant who turns over the property after the first year. It's hard justifying that cost. And so, obviously at the direction of the owner, we'll do what they request us to do. But I really think if you have a tenant in there for 2-3 years, at that point, you really need to consider spending the money to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what are some of the suggestions that you have for landlords to avoid overpricing and sitting vacant, which in the long run is going to cost them more?
Yeah. So really, you have to be open to listening to your property manager.
Yes, listen to the expert.
It's very similar in the sale market too. Like, you know, if you're selling the same thing, you would want to listen to your realtor. And in our world, it's you'd want to listen to your property manager. And then also be open for price reductions, even if it's below what you think your property should rent for, because the longer you sit on the market, the more your listing is going to fall to the wayside and people are going to think there's something wrong with it. It's all of the same stigma that it gets on the sales side.
Absolutely.
It happens the same way on the property management side.
It's a psychological thing because there's nothing really wrong with all of the houses that sit for long. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
But we were so used to, you know, a few years ago that things were going in a day or two that now when they sit for 30 days, you're like, something's wrong with that house. Not necessarily, but if you don't price it right.
Right.
Then you definitely get that. And you lose more money in the long run by doing that.
Yeah, because if you think about it, like if you have to reduce your price by, you know, even if it's $100, that's $1,200 over a 12-month period. But if your rent's at $2,500, if you're vacant for a month, then you're actually losing $2,500 by not lowering it and taking a $1,200 hit. So I know it sounds like a big number, but in the bigger scheme of things, it's probably worth it to take that deduction and have the property rented.
That's why it's important to work with a professional, because they can do all of that for you and really show you the big picture, not immediate, not, oh, I'm missing out on $100 a month. Well, no. You're gaining this much by reducing it by $100. So that's really important. Michelle, are there any rent calculators online that are accurate or they're just there to do algorithms?
Yeah, I think it's they're really just algorithms. And I personally think like, if I'm looking at your property, I'm really analyzing the data. I'm really taking like a micro market of where you live and getting a good pulse on that. Whereas, you know, we'll just use Zillow as an example. I don't know their algorithm, but I'm just going to say that they're probably on a bigger scale. So when you're, you know, talking about Charlotte, they're looking at Charlotte as a whole versus
pocket areas.
Yes.
And it is different.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go from one area to, and I don't want to mention areas, but if you go to a fancy area compared to an area that's not that fancy, then it's going to be totally different.
Yes.
You can't compare one with the other for sure. Okay. Yeah. Seasonality. Does it affect the rental rates in North and South Carolina? And I mean, I think this happens nationwide, honestly, but how does seasonality play into this?
Yeah, so we'll definitely see like big dips like in our market. So like starting around like right before Thanksgiving. And honestly, it goes into February. So right now it's a very slow time. And then a very high season is going to be the summer because the kids are out of school. It's easier to transfer the kids in their, you know, change their schools and whatnot when school is not in session. So if, you know, if a tenant has a lease, I really will try to make that date work so it's not in this kind of slowish period, even if we have to do like a 14-month lease just to get it over.
So
that
they don't move out on December 1st. And then now you're, you know, it's going to be slower until probably the beginning of March, maybe February, March. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
I need to hire. That is very true. Okay. Yeah. What else about seasonality? Is there anything else that landlords need to be thinking about when it comes to seasonality?
No, I really think like it doesn't slow down as much, but like once school starts, people are less likely to uproot their kids if they've already started in a school, unless they could move them before it started. But I really think like, you know, I would say probably like May through August is like your prime property management, like get a lease done in those months. And then there's like a little bit slower period from September through November. Okay. And then in the spring, you know, March through April.
Okay.
That is just a little bit slower.
That makes sense. Now, Michelle, where can people, all the viewers that are watching us right now, connect with you for guidance, follow your work, or do a consultation with you about property management?
Sure. So for property management services, I work with Renting Charlotte. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook under that. And then if you are looking for an investment property, I am a realtor. So I can help you do that as well. And for that, you can find me on social media at Legacy Home Group NC on both areas.
Love it. That was Legacy Home Group NC. If you want to work with her to either buy or sell an investment property or any kind of property, really. Yeah. But we're talking about investment right now, for sure. She can definitely help you with that. She's actually an investor herself. She's very humble about saying that. She probably has 55 properties already at this point.
And one day,
one day. Yes. And for property management?
Renting Charlotte.
Renting Charlotte. And we are going to be back. Coming up next, we are going to have Tenant Screening 101. This is the one that I need to listen to. How to protect your property and your sanity. We will be right back. Stories, strategies, and inspiration to help you write your next home chapter. This is Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Veronica Dinkins, and you're watching Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. Let's jump back into today's conversation. This next segment hits a major pain point, finding the right tenant. If you've ever owned an investment property, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Many owners fear that nightmare tenants because one wrong choice can lead to months or years of regret. Tenant screening is where profit and peace begin. Good tenants protect your property, they pay on time, and they communicate. And bad tenants, unfortunately they do exist, cause thousands in damages, late payments, and legal battles. Michelle, this is a fun subject for me because I'm dealing with that right now. What qualifies someone as a good tenant beyond a credit score?
I would say having a job that they've been at for...
or having a job.
Yeah, well, in general, yeah, sure. Having a job that they've been at for an extended period of time, I think is healthy. And then also somebody that has been at their residence for an extended period of time.
Okay.
Really just somebody who's kind of been rooted someplace.
Yeah.
I'd probably say for 2 or more years.
Okay.
That just looks at stability, right?
True.
And gives you a history that you could potentially call their past landlord and feel like they would, you know, give you an honest answer.
Yes. So Rafa maybe would be somebody who moves every 6 months or something like that.
Yeah. Or even every year, because I mean, think about like everything that you have in your house, like having to uproot that every year. Like,
yes,
there's a reason somebody would do that. It may be a good reason. It may be a job change. But if they're consistently doing that, and when you look at their like 2-year rental history and they have like 5 places listed. Yeah.
In the same area. It's like, oh, okay, what's happening here?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. And what are the biggest red flags during the tenant screening that you look at?
So we've had a lot of people submit pay stubs that had been altered. So that was like something that was going around. And they're a little bit hard to identify. So really just making sure that you're, you know, not just glazing over the information, but kind of making sure that it all looks legitimate, and then also fact checking it with, you know, information you can find online about the company, and then also making sure you're calling the employers.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is like who they list for their past landlord and the contact information that they give you, because that's the other area that they can, you know, our system does ask them to put in like an email address and phone number for their landlord. And a lot of times, like, you'll look and they'll put in some random email and you're like,
that doesn't sound right. Yeah. And I mean, they can make it up and they can have a friend. I've seen this. They can have a friend just, hey, pretend like you're going to be my landlord. So is there a way to verify further than that?
So like anybody can verify like who has the deed to the property, because that truly should be your landlord.
Yes.
So if you go online and you look at the tax records and you find out who the actual owner is of the property, that is typically who you would want to talk to, but they also may have a property manager. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. I would just say trying to get to the right person first, and seeing if you can connect with them. And then you can ask them about the history on the property, and just ask like general questions about, you know, and this would be different, like coming like from a personal landlord to a personal landlord versus if it was like me calling, asking these questions, but just trying to like make sure that the person that I'm talking to is really the owner.
Yes.
And just trying to ask them questions about maybe the area or the house itself, or, you know, just to try to make sure that you are talking to the right person.
Yes. So that if they get tangled up, that you know, whoa, wait a minute, this might not be right.
Yeah.
And how can you legally verify income and employment when you do the screening?
So we ask the tenants to provide that information to us. But again, then taking that information and going a step further and looking online to make sure that, you know, the company information matches what they put in. Unfortunately, a lot of times the companies themselves are restricted from sharing information. So a lot of times you cannot get that company to directly verify it. Yes, but you could ask for bank statements so that it could possibly show direct deposits going into the account. But really, you just kind of have to fact check and make sure that there's no red flags that come
up. Have you ever, or can you ask for a letter maybe from their supervisor or something like that from the company?
You can.
Just to verify this person works here and then you can verify that that supervisor actually works in the company and all that.
Yeah. I think you'd have a hard time like getting the information from the company directly.
Yeah.
But if you could find that person online and, you know, maybe they have their work history as wherever, yes, you could try to do that.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And should landlords, let's talk about gut feelings here. Should we trust as landlords our gut feelings or should we stick strictly to the criteria? Because I know this can be a gray area with the law as well.
Yes.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so it really is a gray area. While I'm a huge fighter for going with your gut feeling, unfortunately, if you get down the road with somebody and you get into the application stage and they provide everything, everything seems to check out, but you still have a gut feeling, but they pass all of your things, you really can't go with your gut feeling. You really have to kind of either ask for more information to resolve the bad feeling that you're having, or you have to just say, you know what, maybe my intuition is off.
Gotcha.
Because it would be very easy for somebody to come back and say that you were discriminating in some sort of way. If they passed all of your criteria, there was really no reason to decline them. And again, that's why having a property manager makes it a lot easier because it takes that emotional connection from the owner and transfers it to me. And I am just black and white.
Yeah, exactly. So when you say no to an applicant, do you have to provide a reason or how is that part, I guess, monitored by the law?
Yeah. So when we do it, yes, we list a reason. And it is either usually the biggest thing that hangs somebody up is their credit.
Okay.
And credit is kind of a broad term that you can use.
Right.
And so it doesn't have to be super specific and we shouldn't be giving super specific information about somebody's credit report because we are not the credit reporting agency. So we give them contact information for Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, whoever.
You just say based on your credit, we weren't able to approve your application.
Correct. And then they can go back and pull their own credit report to see what it is that we're seeing.
Okay. So if you're denying an application because of work history or because they've moved a lot, how would you word that?
Honestly, that's not something you could decline them for.
Right. Okay.
It just goes into the decision process of let's dig a little bit deeper and have a little bit more conversation about
that. And maybe that can come into play when you have multiple applicants. How do you handle when you have multiple applicants?
Yeah. So in that case, it really, like if you have multiple applicants and they're all apples to apples, like you really just have to go through and see which one has the strongest application. Maybe somebody's willing to sign a 2-year lease. Maybe somebody's willing to pay a little bit more money.
Okay.
Like they just kind of, you can go back and negotiate with them, but usually it's best to try to weed out the strongest applicant and negotiate with them first before going back to all of them and saying, give me your best offer. Because unfortunately in the rental world, that turns people off and you could lose all three applicants.
That makes sense. Okay. So you don't go with the gut feeling when you have many applicants.
No.
You go with the strongest application based on the criteria.
Yeah.
You try to get the best terms that you can from that person. Yes. That's a great tip, and not ask everybody.
Correct.
Give me your highest and best. Like we said, I hate that term. Yeah. Give me your highest and best and turn people off. And especially in the market nowadays that they say, you know what? There's three other houses here that I can go rent. So good luck.
Yes. Yes. Very true.
That is a good point. I love that. Yeah. And what are the biggest mistakes that landlords make during screening? I need to ask that for the previous owners who had the property that we bought because, oh my gosh. Anyways.
I think specifically in this market, it can get a little bit disheartening when your property's on the market for a longer period of time and you really just want to get somebody in there. And so when you get an application, you're willing to overlook some of the red flags.
Yeah.
And I will say, like me personally, like you said, I am an investor. And so like when it, and I do manage my own properties, but it is hard because if, when your property's on the market for a long time and somebody comes in and they're willing to do it, but they have some red flags. Yeah. It's really, really hard. Really hard.
So maybe in that specific scenario, you need to rent it. Somebody came in, you have a gut feeling about something in specific. What are some of the things that you can add as a disclaimer maybe? Could you address it that way and put it as a disclaimer or, you know, if this happens, then you're breaking the lease and then we would ask you to leave the house, something like that. Does that make sense?
I think that the North Carolina and South Carolina lease cover that pretty well.
Okay.
Like as far as like breach of lease. So I don't think we really need to add anything with that. But I would say like if you had somebody that you're kind of like maybe their income isn't quite there or maybe their credit isn't quite there, like maybe instead of like maybe you just ask for an additional security deposit. Like that's an extra month worth of, you know, rent per se that you're holding in case something happens. So I would say like if you feel like you could work with this person, but they're not perfect, they don't meet your criteria, there's always things that we can tweak, but I don't necessarily think that it's changing the contract.
Okay, perfect. But it's things in the contract that, or the terms.
The terms.
For whenever they come in. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
This like is you why could I need a property manager.
You could do a shorter term lease. Yeah, so like if you typically would do a 12-month lease, let's just say, okay, you know, I'm kind of unsure, but let's do it for 3 months and we can always keep renewing after that.
I love that. That is very smart. And up next, our final segment, we're going to talk about maintenance, repairs, and red flags. What really impacts your ROI or return on investment? We'll be right back. Stories, strategies, and inspiration to help you write your next home chapter. This is Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Veronica Dinkins, and you're watching Home Story with Veronica on Now Media Television. Let's jump back into today's conversation. Welcome back to Home Story. Don't miss any of our episodes or Now Media TV favorites, all available on Roku, iOS, and online at www.nowmedia.tv. From home insights to lifestyle and culture, Now Media TV brings bilingual programming 24/7, always ready whenever you are. We are closing out today's episode with a topic that affects every homeowner and landlord: maintenance and repairs. Oh, these are fun. These choices directly impact your profit, resale value, and tenant satisfaction. Many owners avoid maintenance until it's too late, leading to higher costs, upset tenants, and major losses in resale value. Knowing what to prioritize makes all the difference in the world. Michelle, in your expertise, what is the difference between normal wear and tear and actual damage that needs to be addressed?
So in North Carolina, the Real Estate Commission actually came up with a brochure that we hand out when we're signing a lease with somebody.
Okay.
That kind of, I mean, in general, it goes over and it gives examples of both what normal wear and tear would be and what damages would be. So the tenant signs that before they move in, and also the landlord signs that when they get the lease packet. So there's no surprises at the end. But just in general terms, like scuffs on the wall from furniture, like minor scratches in the floor from just everyday living in the property, those are going to be your normal wear and tear scenarios.
Yeah.
But like if there's a hole in the wall or damage.
When you say hole, a hole, not a nail. Right?
Not a nail hole, right. No. I would say anything as far as nail holes go, like if you're thinking about size, if you think about the size of a dime.
Okay.
Like in our area, that's anything larger than that would be considered damage.
Yeah.
And especially now that the, you know, everybody has their TVs mounted, yes, on the wall. We recommend when a tenant puts one up, just to leave it because they are, yeah, so inexpensive these days. Just leave it and move on. But, yeah, if they take it down, it is
same
not
one with
damage.
The house. Just, yes, leave the TV mounted.
Just leave it up,
yeah,
there. But the, you know, those, so those things would be normal wear and tear. But if we're talking like a hole in the wall, mm-hmm, or they had something, you know, with the command strips up, but when they go to pull the command strip, it like, yeah, rips some of the drywall off, or, you know, a gouge in a hardwood floor from like moving heavy furniture.
Right.
That would be more damages.
Stains on the carpet.
So it depends. So like if we ask the tenants, it is part of their lease that they professionally clean the carpets, okay, when they move out.
Okay.
So if the stains come up, for the most part in the carpet, no, but...
Okay, that's normal.
Yeah, it just... I mean, you have to think, like, somebody's going to live in your, yeah, property.
Yeah.
If you think about yourself, like, have you ever, like, tipped your coffee cup or... Wine.
100 times.
And you know, like, so you somebody's living in your property. Yeah. There's going to be lived, yeah, in.
It's not going to be perfect. It's, no, not. Yes, exactly.
So things will happen, but.
But your dog ripping off the carpet.
Yes. A cat clawing at, you know, the door, a dog chewing on a windowsill or,
right,
or a baseboard or something like that. Those would be damages.
So those would be something that you take from the deposit or a bill to the tenant once they move out?
Yeah. So we hold the security deposit and at the end of their term, we'll go through and we'll itemize the things that we have deemed as damages. And that comes out of the security deposit.
Okay.
Now, if it's more than what the security deposit was, the owner does get to then keep the security deposit and we would then bill them for the remainder of it.
Okay, gotcha. And so speaking of that, what are some of the maintenance items that landlords should keep a budget for every year?
So like a big one off the top of my head is HVAC. So making, okay, sure that either if there's a company that you like to use, then you would want to have a service agreement with them. If you don't have anybody, then ask your property manager who they use the most, because they can set up that service agreement. And that's just them coming in every 6 months,
okay,
and doing a tune-up on your system. We participate, our tenants pay for a benefit package,
okay,
when they move in. And part of that is HVAC filters delivered directly to them.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Every 3 months. So we've tried to address that from the inside.
Yeah.
But we really also need to take care of the outside unit as well, which is on the owner.
And that will prevent the owners from getting the astronomical surprise issues, mm-hmm, right in the middle of winter, right in the middle of summer,
yes,
where the HVAC just goes out on you and,
yeah,
that becomes a problem. That actually happened to me when I was a tenant. The HVAC went out in Florida in the middle of summer.
Oh my gosh.
We had to go to a hotel. We just,
yeah,
could not stay in that house. So,
yeah,
I love that. Just be proactive. And that's, I think that makes a world of a difference of having a property manager, because those are not necessarily things that you're going to think about,
yeah,
because you're not, you know, doing this on a day-to-day basis and you haven't seen as many things come up with other properties that you necessarily don't think of them until you have to call the HVAC and pay them thousands of dollars because the unit went out on you.
Yeah.
That is some great advice. And which repairs should be done before listing a home for rent?
I mean, anything that's an issue, really.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want to turn the property over with issues, because that's just going to elevate the number of maintenance requests that the tenant is submitting, because now they're going to look at your property with a microscope,
yeah,
and every little thing that they see wrong, they're going to submit a maintenance request for. So if we have a turnover and we should address all of the things during the vacancy, and then that way, when we turn it over to a new tenant, everything is at the way that it should be, for the most part, and we should alleviate those maintenance requests coming
in. Yes, absolutely. And how can landlords avoid surprise repair costs? I mean, we've been talking about this, but it's such an important thing.
Yeah.
Because it can really take away from your profit.
Yeah. I do think like having a, like setting up a small amount to transfer every month and just having an emergency fund for that property is really important because like you said, they're surprise repairs. We don't know when they're going to happen. We don't know, you know, when the water heater is going to, when the water heater is going to go. We don't know when your dishwasher is going to stop working.
Oh yeah. You know? And it happens.
Yes. And so it's just important to make sure that just like, you know, you set aside an escrow account for your taxes and your homeowner's insurance, you do the same thing for repairs.
I think that can change the life of a property manager or of our investment owner.
Yeah.
When having a house, what you just said, and making sure you put that money aside. So when things happen, you don't have the big surprise and you're not scrambling trying to pay because you have to repair it. There's somebody living there.
Yes.
That is depending on that repair.
Yeah. And I know it's hard because a lot of times, like especially right now, we might just be getting enough rent to cover your mortgage and my management cost. And so there might not be a whole lot of money that you can roll over into that emergency fund, but you really have to budget for it because, I mean, unless you're going to take a credit card or a home improvement loan to make those repairs if it's a big cost.
And it's just one of the things that we have to keep in mind whenever we want to invest in a property, right? These are some of the things that we have to consider and not just ignore them and think they're not going to happen because, I mean, it's a house. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Something is going to stop working and you're going to have to fix it. So there's no way to avoid that. So speaking of that, of issues that happen, in your experience, have you seen any small issues that turn into expensive problems later?
Yeah, because I think that sometimes like you are so eager just to put a Band-Aid on a problem and not really want to address the bigger issue. And sometimes that Band-Aid might work for an extended period of time, but you're really just delaying the thing that really needs to be fixed. So, you know, I don't have a situation off the top of my head, but like plumbing stuff, like we had one recently where, you know, the plumbing kept breaking in different areas of the house and the homeowner had to make the decision, like, do I just repair this one section or do I just replumb the whole house? Because that was the advice of the plumber. And you're kind of like, are you just trying to upsell me?
Right.
Or is that really going to fix the problem? But, you know, that's just an example. Like, because he had made that plumbing repair a couple of times.
Oh, okay.
Not in the same area. Yeah. It just kept happening in different areas. And so, you know, he thought about it and he was like, you know, I do think it's a bigger issue. So he did. He bit the bullet and he replumbed the whole house. So,
but now he's not going to have to worry about constant maintenance, repairs and things that have to do with the plumbing. Yeah. Or something happening to the plumbing later on that's going to cost way more and be more, you know, tedious to take care of.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's very important. I love that. Now, Michelle, where, again, can viewers learn more from you or connect with you? Let's talk about first for your property management because you're an amazing property manager. She's been doing this for years. I've seen her. She has a lot of properties, different properties that she manages. Where can people find you guys to get help if they have a property home that they want to rent out?
Yes. So on social media, you can find us under Renting Charlotte. We also have a website, rentingcharlotte.com. And just, you know, that is just general. So please, if you are interested in working with me, you need to ask for me and they will get you over to me.
Perfect. And you service North and South Carolina, correct?
I do. I have both licenses. So yes, I can service both North and South Carolina, local to Charlotte. So I, you know, I can't say that I cover all of both of the states, but local to Charlotte. Yes.
Charlotte and surrounding areas.
Yes.
Beautiful. And what about if somebody wants to work with you to find an investment property or to sell the one that they have right now?
Yes. So you can reach me through Legacy Home Group NC on both socials as well as the website legacyhomegroupnc.com.
Love it. Make sure you contact her. Michelle, thank you so much for breaking down what homeowners and investors truly need to hear: practical, clear, and experience-backed advice. Today, we learned how the right property manager, smart pricing, careful tenant screening, and proactive maintenance can protect your investment and create long-term success. To our viewers, remember, understanding your home story is the first step to writing a profitable one. Thank you so much for watching Home Story. Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And I am Veronica Vickers. We'll see you next time.